Just waiting on Chad Barford here. Let's give it a couple minutes and then we can get started. How's it going, Chad?
Doing good, man. What's up?
So how's your space last night?
Pretty good. Yeah, it was fun. Always fun to chat with the ThorSwap community. Just went over some updates, things like that. So a lot of stuff coming there.
Yeah, what's new?
Well, this week, definitely the Thor name launch was pretty exciting. So that UI went live on Tuesday. So it was cool to see the community start to play with Thor names. Did you see that? Did you see that data thread from one of the guys that goes through the flip side stuff? And it was pretty interesting seeing like the use cases of Thor names so far. I'm sure we'll get into that stuff more in a couple of minutes, but yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really know what to make of that data. It was very interesting to look at, but I don't know what to take away from that.
Yeah, agreed. It was pretty early, only like a couple of days of data, really. But it was still cool to see. I thought it was funny that one point about somebody registered a Thor name with 50 years of subscription prepaid. I thought that was pretty interesting.
That's conviction right there. It was a very random name too. You're right. I did see that one.
Oh, I don't even remember which one that was specifically. Was that in the thread? I might have missed it.
Yeah, I think it was there. It said the name that was registered for 50 years, and it was just a random name. It's not like a word you'd recognize. It's might be like someone's name or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to find that. But yeah, they're pretty fun to play with. Like definitely, if people haven't messed with it yet, give it a try.
What up, guys? How's it going? Sorry, I'm a little bit late.
Hey, Chad. What's going on, man?
What up?
We were just talking about Thor name. I guess we can just get started. We could start talking about Thor name. So Thor names is live right now. You can register a Thor name pretty easily on ThorSwap, and you can basically use it to send. You can put your like Bitcoin address, your Ethereum address in this Thor name that you registered. It costs 10 rune to register, and then 1 rune per year. It just has the renewal fee. It's sort of like ENS, and you can just basically send, you can send any coin that is registered to your Thor address. So if you have a Bitcoin address registered to it, someone can send to, someone can send to familiar cow the Thor name, and then it just gets routed to that person who has it registered. So convenient for peer-to-peer transactions, and also, just kind of closing the loop there, because the pre-registration was so long ago, and it kind of paves the way for Monero coming up. So yeah, interesting new feature that is finally live after a long time of waiting for it.
Good for interfaces for affiliate fees as well, just because of constraints with the memo field. So I know like on the ThorSwap side that I guess this would apply to all interfaces, but for UTXO chains, it was too long prior to the Thor name being used. So now interfaces can collect fees on UTXO chains because they can just fit the affiliate address with a short couple character Thor name if they want to. So that's another cool thing about it.
Yeah, it's even more useful now just because with DEX aggregation, actually it's out in version 92, I think. Now there's even more data that you can kind of fit into that memo field, like more things you can fit. And so like the ability to kind of shrink things down and be kind of concise is even more useful.
Yeah, and part of that being the limitations of the op return on Bitcoin. It's only so big, so you kind of need it. You need a short Thor name in order to get fit an affiliate address into something that has to use a Bitcoin memo to start the transaction. So if you're going from Bitcoin to something else, previously it wasn't possible for front ends to capture that revenue, but with Thor names, you can just put in a really short Thor name there. I think ThorSwap just uses the letter T. So you just, throw that in there, and then they can collect revenue from the transactions that go from Bitcoin, which is obviously like one of the biggest, value drivers of the entire Thor chain network.
Also for users, you can really easily swap out addresses if you want to change things over time. So like, let's say I have Chad Thoreau and I assign a Bitcoin address to that, but then I want to go back and actually change that. Super easy to do. And you only have to pay the gas. So you're only paying 0.02 rune to actually update and assign those addresses and change them around. And right now, like the address that buys the Thor name is the kind of like the controller of it, but in the future, I believe that will change, and then we might even see marketplaces and things like that pop up once you can fully transfer the ownership.
Yeah, I think that's something we might be seeing at some point, probably, possibly rather. depending on what the community wants. If the community wants to create like a secondary market for these things, it's possible to create like an on-chain marketplace where you can like buy and sell and kind of like NFTs sort of in some way.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool idea. I mean, probably not the highest priority for the core devs to be working on. I don't know how difficult it is, but I do think it'd be a pretty fun thing to see someday. One other thing to mention on ThorNames, just in case people aren't too aware of it, is just to be aware that this is not a universal thing across all of crypto and all wallets. So, you know, if you're just using MetaMask or sending from a centralized exchange, they're not going to be plugged in with ThorNames. So, you know, only use this with interfaces and wallets that you know are integrated with ThorNames. If you send from some random wallet and you just put in chat or whatever, like, it's not going to work. So just be aware of that. I'm sure we'll see most of the ecosystem projects rolling it out. But yeah, just to be aware of that.
All right, moving on.
Yes, sorry. I was trying to look for the longest registered door name because there was a very interesting thread that just came out at Flipside Crypto. Shout out to those guys. They're doing really awesome, on-chain analytics work. And, they put a really nice thread together about door names. I'll try and pin it up here. But in the meantime, just the other day, we just announced that ThorChain.com is now live. So we've been working on an update to ThorChain.com. It's in the bio of ThorChain right now. And I guess it's to be determined whether it'll always be there, but it's just a new interface that people can go to and learn about ThorChain. And it really was created just to be, very simple and easy to follow and understand what ThorChain does, and it drives users towards a couple of different core actions that we really wanted to emphasize on the website. So the first thing obviously being making a swap. So you can make a swap in like two or three clicks from the ThorChain.com website. Also adding liquidity, learning what Rune is, and then a page for integrations showing that any developer can integrate ThorChain into their own web app or dApp or what have you. So yeah, new ThorChain.com website is live. Definitely check it out. It's the website in the bio for the ThorChain account right now. And yeah, to be seen whether, that stays there or, the community can decide what they want as the main site, but it's just something that we've been working on for a little bit, like the Nine Realms team has been working on, and excited to finally put that out there. So if anyone has comments or feedback on it, definitely love to hear it. If, anyone that wants to come up and, say anything about it, we're up here. So you just request and let us know. Did you guys check it out?
I did. Yeah. It's a great job with it. I know you were definitely one of the main people kind of leading that. So good work there, but yeah, it looks really clean to me. I do think we need just like a clean site like this for, burps getting all weird, but like you were saying, we just need like a good landing page for like a new user to stumble on, because a lot of the other ones that have been kind of going around are great and go really in depth, but they can be kind of like overwhelming as just like what is ThorChain? Oh, my friend has never heard of ThorChain, what do I send them? So I think this is a good step in that direction of just like a kind of like a flagship simplified website just explaining what ThorChain's about. So yeah, great job.
Yeah, so when me and Pluto were like creating this site, and we were thinking about the current site. So, someone that's like heard of ThorChain and thinks like, oh, I've heard that this protocol can make cross-chain swaps, and I go to ThorChain.org, and it's pretty difficult to get to like a page like ThorSwap or DeFi Spot or any of the ThorChain front ends. There's a lot of info about like what ThorChain is. There's a ton of info about what it is and what the ecosystem is, but it's very difficult to actually get to a page to actually do an action that people would want to do on ThorChain, such as making a swap or adding liquidity. So that's really the main goal behind this site, to be really simple and driving users to be able to make swaps on the front ends that offer ThorChain swaps. So that's a lot of impetus there. What's up, Marcus? I just brought you up.
What's up? So I have a question. I was trying to explain to my brother-in-law like the difference between like ThorChain's ILP versus Bancor's ILP. And I was having a little bit of trouble. Basically, I understand the difference between like protecting one side versus protecting both sides of ILP, right? Denominated in Rune versus one side denominated in just Vancouver. But is there anything else I'm missing there? And is there somewhere we could put that on the site to kind of clarify how possibly?
Yeah, I mean, to my knowledge, I don't think there's a huge difference between the Bancor's implementation and ours. Either case, you're measuring the amount of, I'm not sure if the math they use is the same as ours. I never actually looked that much into the detail of it. But in either case, you're looking at how much IL is experienced after a 100-day period and then reimbursing the user via, you know, either in Bancor's case, I think they're just minting Bancor, the token. In our case, we take some Rune out of the reserve to kind of supplement the user. But at a high level, I think they're quite similar.
Well, I think there is actually like a lot of, there's different fundamentals when it comes to Bancor, because they mint new tokens, like basically when, you know, they were offering impermanent loss protection, they were essentially minting new tokens to provide for the impermanent loss protection, which then drove the price of the Bancor token down, which created more impermanent loss. They keep minting more BNT in order to sustain that. So I think that's a big difference between the impermanent loss protection on Thorchain, where it comes out of a finite supply, which is already, you know, earmarked as the rewards to the system that, you know, LPs would get. And this is just kind of taking from the future rewards of of Thorchain liquidity providers, and instead just giving it to an NLP that needs protection, but it's not actually inflationary on the token itself, and it doesn't create some kind of death loop spiral.
God, so these are emissions that would have been provided to LP providers and also node holders. Am I correct there? It's out of that pool.
Yeah, exactly. It comes out of the reserve, and the reserve is basically the fund that emits rewards to the liquidity providers in the nodes. Yep.
Thank you. And also,
yeah, so essentially, it's just a reallocation of those rewards. Like, you know, instead of giving it out slowly over time, it just takes a chunk and gives it to an LP for the protection.
Cool. You guys made that super clear. Appreciate it.
Sweet. All right. So, yeah, Thorchain.com launch. Also, in the bio, we put up a link tree in the bio that's new. Something just playing around with and experimenting with, something to get basically like an aggregator to put all of the, you know, important Thorchain links in one spot, especially like a lot of the community projects. I think, there's a lot of smaller projects that really get buried, especially, you know, and like, you know, small websites or just at like Telegram bots and apps and things like that. So playing around with that right now in the Thorchain bio. So any feedback on that is always appreciated, but that's something that's new. So moving on, let's talk about the Atom launch. So Atom was just added to Thorchain. It's been testing on StageNet for the past couple weeks, and it's ready to go. So Chad, what's the process to get Atom activated? So currently the code is all there. It just needs to, we need another churn in order to activate the pools, correct?
Yeah, so we need another churn. And the process of doing a churn, we produce a new key. And that key, we just kind of publicize the new, from that key, we generate a pub key. From the pub key, we generate a bunch of addresses for a bunch of different chains, including Atom in this case. And so we churn, I think it's going to be on Tuesday or around Tuesday. We'll do a churn, and then we'll have an address to send, you know, Atom tokens to. And then once that happens, somebody, and technically it could be anybody, but I think the core team will, you know, put some atoms and some room together to kind of kick it off. But once that happens, everybody can start just adding liquidity to the pool and swapping and doing all that stuff. I think going forward, we might change the process for how we add new chains, like when we do Avalanche, to make it a little bit simpler and like easier to do and less of like less management of it. Like next time we'll do another like vote for, you know, AVAX, for example, which will be largely just a symbolic vote, just to like kind of get a consensus on the nodes from like where they want to do. But it has no real effect on the code base at all or anything. And so then once that's kind of symbolically approved, then, you know, we'll merge the AVAX chain client. We'll do the node spin up, all that kind of stuff, like the node infrastructure, all that kind of stuff. And once the churn happens, people can start adding liquidity, swapping, all that kind of stuff. And so it becomes much more streamlined and just kind of not really managed by anybody in particular, which is part of the process of like, of building this chain. It's just moving away from, you know, certain individuals using, you know, mere admin keys to like get us to what we need to get to. You're just kind of removing the usage or removing the admin keys. Anytime we use admin keys, we want to kind of remove or reduce at least where that's being done or possible. So I think we'll get much more streamlined. But I think come Tuesday, we should have Adam, you know, running live on the network and people can start swapping and adding liquidity. It's going to be great.
And that opens up Thorchain into the IBC ecosystem. So then hopefully in the future, we can start seeing some aggregator implementations. I think that just needs to be figured out. But really, it just opens up trading from all the Bitcoin pools that are on Thorchain, all the pools that are on Thorchain, including Bitcoin, into the IBC ecosystem. So that should be open on Tuesday, hopefully. Maybe a little bit later, just because all this, you know, all these things that need to happen. But that everything is merged and ready to go. The churn just needs to happen to create the vault to start this thing running. So that next week, people can start adding liquidity and swapping Atom token second times.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. Getting Atom added is obviously a big kind of like introduction into that entire ecosystem. And then starting to work with like either it's Osmosis or maybe it's Gravity Dex. Like I'm not really quite sure at this point, like what's happening when or what. But like start that process so that you can swap within the Cosmos ecosystem directly to BVC without us as a community adding like every chain underneath the sun of Cosmos. Like this becomes much more efficient way of operating.
Yeah, totally. Me and Mogarki were chatting about this on the ThorSwap space yesterday, and yeah, I think for Cosmos in particular, like the aggregation is going to be really exciting just because there's so many IBC tokens floating around, so much activity in that world. So you know, once you can go and just swap any IBC asset all the way to BTC, vice versa, anything else that's integrated in Thorchain, all the other aggregators, like that's when we'll, you know, that's like the anything to anything vision really coming together. So that'll be really exciting. But yeah, just to kind of clarify for people that might be newer, like this means on Tuesday that just the Atom Rune pool is created. So you can earn yield providing liquidity there. You can swap Atom BTC, BTC Atom, everything else, vice versa. But yeah, if you want to go IBC, you'd have to be, of course, doing like another manual step yourself to get into that world, but you have the easy path to get there now. So that'll be really great.
Yeah, it'll take a little bit longer for the aggregator to, you know, come to fruition and maybe, you know, some design changes. Maybe it even requires something like an Osmo pool instead to loop in. So, you know, there's some figuring out that needs to be done there, but you know, that just adding this chain is the first step towards that journey of, you know, anything to anything. So great to be on this road. Also AVAX coming soon. That's still being worked on. That'll be after Atom. And the aggregator should be ready to go live once that chain gets shipped. So that aggregator is close to ready to go. And once Avalanche AVAX is live on Thorchain, it should be ready for the aggregator pattern. We have a partner lined up, and that's going to be a really exciting launch, but that's to come in the future.
Yeah, that's an exciting one. Might we see AVAX on stage in it pretty soon, right? Like, that's got to be getting pretty close.
Yeah, it is. I think possibly in the next version, either 93 or 94, you might see the AVAX like chain client be merged into the main branch. And then once that happens and gets deployed, like StageNet can just go ahead and that's a Nine Realms controlled environment. So they can just go ahead and just enable it and start kind of kicking the tires and seeing how it goes. So I think we're interested in keep on pushing forward after we do AVAX. I have to do Atom and go to the AVAX next. And then after that, just keep on rolling out more chains.
That's what we like to hear.
Yes, sir. And lastly, Chad, before we let people up for questions, is there anything you want to say about single-sided yield? I don't think we've really touched on that much on these spaces yet because that, you know, been kind of cooking that design, but it seems like it's becoming a little more solid now. So do you want to like kind of go over that design a little bit to help people wrap their heads around this new single-sided yield feature that you're proposing?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is pretty big. I consider this to be like humongous, in fact. Getting yield on a single asset is like, in many ways, the holy grail. It's something that we've been talking about internally for like literally years. And we've been kind of like struggling with implementation that made sense and, you know, that wouldn't, you know, create like a house of cards in some sense. Like we thought of it different ways in the past, but just like, it just didn't feel right. It just didn't feel like it was rock solid. And so we kind of felt for a long period that there wasn't a clean or clear solution to it. But once we had synthetics done, and then we thought about synthetics more, we realized that that was actually a way to do it, as long as you have a way to like to de-risk the LPs from like a leverage over leveraged room position. And so we figured that the way to do that was just to use the you know 170 million room that's in the reserve as just a kind of a counterweight in some sense. And it's like, you know, the amount of room that the network has in the reserve is like 170 million, but the only amount of room that can be added to the network today is probably like, well, last time I looked, it was like 20 million room or something like this. I don't know what it is now because it's been a few weeks, but like whatever it's been now. And so like, it's plenty of room there. And then with doing so, like you open up this massive investment opportunity for the entire industry. Right. Like if you think about the number of people, like I think about it in terms of like a Venn diagram, right? If you picture a Venn diagram in your head and one circle is like the size of like a tangerine, right? And that's like people who want to earn Rune on their room, right? And if you think about people who want to earn BTC on their BTC, like that's a ginormous circle that's like the size of a semi truck, because obviously Bitcoin's considerably larger than like, you know, the Rune asset is. And then the union between those two things, like is like the people who want to earn Rune and earn BTC. Right, for example. And so like you can think of that, like it's a tiny little itty bitty sliver between those two unions of those two circles. But if you say that, okay, now you don't have to be that in that little sliver, you can now be in that giant semi truck size circle that is Bitcoin or that is Ethereum or that is Tether or that is or whatever, that is obviously a huge shift, like in terms of the capabilities that this network has and the amount of people and capital that it can service, just like, you know, 1,000x almost overnight in some sense. So that's like the actual meaning behind it, how significant that is for the network itself. Now the problem becomes at this point is that like, well, you launch this thing, all the BTC maxis get happy about it or whatever, and people start dumping just BTC into the network and earning BTC on the BTC without Rune exposure, which is great. But then you run into this problem of, well, how do you secure that BTC, right? And so the network will basically, the caps will be hit, the hard caps rather than the soft caps that we're all familiar with, the soft caps in the earlier days of ChaosNet. But now it's like the hard caps, right, where the network has to maintain economic security. So that becomes like the next thing we kind of have to tackle as a community is like, well, how do we scale the bond so that the bond can grow with the other side? The answer to that is like, you really can't to some degree, just because the amount of Rune in the world is far less in terms of like value. Is far less than the amount of BTC in the world or the amount of ETH in the world, the amount of, you know, Doge in the world or whatever. And so there are always going to be a limitation to that. But the intention is that the value of Rune should, in theory, because there's so much pressure to buy a Rune, because the incentive pendulum is going to swing to the node side, because like a lot of people, everybody's YOLOing into the pools, the yield in the pools will reduce and the yield on the nodes will increase, right? So then all of a sudden, like the yield for nodes becomes like, you know, really great. And so then people start buying up Rune like crazy because they want to get that, you know, that juicy yield. And so that creates significant buy pressure in the Rune asset, which causes the value of the Rune token to go up, which means the amount of value of the bond side also goes up. So it's going to be an interesting thing to see that happen. And so I think one of the natural things to happen is, A, I think we'll see a buy pressure on the Rune side just because people are contributing Rune without them really knowing they're doing it. Like the BC Maxi is contributing Rune without cognitively aware that they're doing it. But also we need to figure out ways to make it easier and more readily available for more people to contribute Rune onto the bond side, right? Without needing 300,000 Rune minimums or even complicated infrastructure, which is something that's kind of still being, you know, researched to some degree. I think we figured out a way to actually even remove the minimum bond requirements for nodes. I think we have an idea in our minds of how that can be accomplished, but it's still the same hardware requirements in terms of infrastructure. So we're still to figure out a way to reduce that kind of burden in some way. So we're still doing more research on that stuff and kind of like, and studying some more concepts and ideas and coming up with approaches to solve that. But this like single-sided asset thing, which does not include the Rune asset, it's only Bitcoin or Ethereum or Doge or whatever, is really huge for the project. It's actually one of the biggest and most important features we've ever launched, other than just cross-chain swaps itself. So like it is, in my opinion, the biggest thing we've done since the launch of the network, in my opinion.
Awesome. Yeah, massive. Definitely the holy grail to just earn BTC on BTC and things like that. So I agree. I think it's huge and can really allow things to scale. And makes sense too, like what you said about then it just shifts the incentive pendulum. Because I think one thing people might wonder is like, oh, well, then the, like kind of in the 3x TVL sort of equation, people we all love, like the the first 1x is just coming from the reserve in this context. So it's not really like buy pressure in a sense, but then it still creates all the necessary rune on the security side. So it still allows everything to scale up like in tandem, which is really cool. Another thing I'm curious about kind of on that with the single-sided rune is, I know like with ThorChain multi-sigs, ThorSwap is going to have like a pretty simple UI for that pretty soon. And that combined with, Yggdrasil vaults going away. I'm still trying to get my head around this, but like that kind of creates a scenario where you could have more of like DAO run nodes or something like that. Is that kind of on the right track, or is that still like dreaming?
Yeah. So part of the reason why the network doesn't really allow anybody to still YOLO into some random node and just provide rune wherever, because it really doesn't increase security. Because yes, it puts more rune on the bond side, but that rune is now owned by the person running the node. And so in the world when we did have Yggdrasil vaults before, if Finley Kyle's running the node and, you know, he put in like 10 rune and Thoreau and I both put in like, 100,000 rune each, just hypothetically speaking, then like he could just come ahead and like steal all the funds in the Yggdrasil vault, walk away. You know, yeah, he loses his 10 rune he put up, but he doesn't care because he walked away with like, millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin maybe, or whatever the hell it is. And then me and Chad Thoreau are like the ones holding the bag in a sense. And like, we kind of get screwed and we lose all of our money that we put into the system. The network itself is fine because everything's still solvent, right? Like, no, you can't really steal from the network. You can only steal from like me and Chad Thoreau in this hypothetical scenario. But it sucks for us, right? And we don't want to set up an environment where like people can get like, rug pull like that, right? So like if like Kyle was like, a smart guy, and he is, but like just in hypothetical, like, he runs this like marketing campaign, he builds a brand, he builds some sort of like trust, he gets a bunch of people to put a bunch of capital in there, and then he just starts like rug pulls everybody, just like leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth for obvious reasons. Since we got rid of Yggdrasil vaults, that ability to do so is still there, but it's a lot more difficult to do, because now instead of running like one node with at least 300,000 rune, to churn in with, now you have to run, 2/3 majority of a single Asgard, which is like, I think it's like 12 or 14 nodes or something like this. And they all have to be in the same Asgard, which is on its own not the easiest thing in the world to do. So like, it would be still hard, because you'd have to have like, millions and millions of rune that you'd have to convince the community to like dump into all of your nodes. And like, and the community doesn't know that you run which nodes. Like, you just create different identities for each node. Like, oh, this node provider's name is this, and this one's, and they seem like they're separate, but in reality, it's just the same guy in the background. It's still familiar cow and it's hypothetical. And so like, it becomes a lot more difficult to be able to rug pull the community for that, but it's still mathematically possible, right? It just takes a lot more capital, a lot more intention in some sense. So the idea of running like what we said before of like these light nodes, and today it's more what we're kind of playfully calling passive nodes, is that like it's a little bit different, that you can't rug pull. You still have to run your own node, and so therefore you can't rug pull yourself, because that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But to figure out a way to allow people to just arbitrarily, throw in rune into a node or into the network in general, and still maintain security, it's a problem that myself and other core devs haven't really quite figured out a way to do that and still mathematically guarantee economic security. You can like lean on it and just say like, well, you could YOLO into these nodes and that's fine. We'll just open it up on the network side, and like, anybody can just add rune to any node, and like people can just go ahead and YOLO into it. But then we can't guarantee that you're not going to get rug pulled, right? Like, there's no mathematical guarantee to that. I mean, it probably won't happen because it's very hard and very expensive and all that kind of stuff. But like, we don't lean on probably on this design or this project in general. Like, we don't lean on the idea like, it's probably pretty hard, it probably won't happen. So that's just not the mentality we come from. So what we want is economic security. What we want is mathematical guarantees. And so with most things, or not all the things we do, are kind of rooted in that mentality.
That's what all the bridges say. They just say probably.
Yeah, every single one of them is just like, yeah, probably, right? Like, if the security is worth $300 million and the asset security is worth $1.3 billion, and it's probably fine because it costs you, $200 million to actually steal all those funds. So it's a lot of money. So maybe nobody has enough money to actually do that exploit. which is probably true to some extent. Like, not a lot of people in the world have just like $200 million in spending power at their leisure, right? To some degree, but still, it's possible. And so I lean on possibility. And a lot of those like bridges are just like even worse than that. They're just, a lot of them like are like, oh, we have a multi-sig, like a 2 of 2, where 2 of 4 or like whatever, or like, which is just like, I don't know, we seem like we're just kind of doing the same mistake over and over again, or just somebody just securing some private key somewhere and some buck somewhere that just gets pwned and all the funds leaked. Like Harmony was the most recent example of that, right? Unfortunately. So it's ludicrous because we keep making the same mistake over and over again. But what we need to do is actually design something that's designed to be secure from the ground up, rather than relying on individuals to be like, you know, the custodians of this entire infrastructure, right?
Sweet. We have Secret Ninja up here. Also, if other people have questions, let's let people up. Just hit the button on the bottom left, the request button, and we'll let everyone up to ask questions to Chad, especially about, you know, people have questions about the single-sided yields or these passive nodes, or really about anything. You know, we're just here to answer. We'll be here about, you know, 20 minutes to, you know, until the hour to answer. So, you know, feel free to hit the request button and come up. Hey, Secret.
Hey, guys. A couple of questions, actually. First of all, okay, so single-sided yield. I will bring my BTC. What happens in the background in order for me to get yield on my BTC?
Yeah, so what literally happens in the background is you walk up, you have Bitcoin in your Bitcoin wallet, right, and your BC wallet address. You transfer that Bitcoin into one of the Asgard vaults. It effectively does a swap into a synthetic BTC. That synthetic BTC is then kind of locked away in a vault held by the network itself. And then over some period of time, every once in a while, we have to define the actual time window for this, but maybe it's like an hour, maybe it's a day, I don't really know. But like the network kind of measures using Luvi, which is like a way of measuring the revenue that a pool generated. So it generates, you know, let's just say the Bitcoin pool generated, you know, $100 in the last 10 minutes or whatever, like doesn't matter the numbers here. And then a certain percentage of that will get basically minted some more synthetic Bitcoin into the vault, right? So effectively, when you mint synthetics into that vault, you're basically taking value from the pool, like the LPs. Because the LPs are getting 100% of all the trade volume and all the value, blah, blah, blah. Like they're earning 100% of everything. And so by minting synthetic Bitcoin into the pool, you're basically transferring value from the LPs into the vault to the BDC holders, right? And so how much of that is like pushed from the LPs into the vault, whatever, the Bitcoin vault, just depending upon different attributes. So the LPs are probably going to be earning, you know, 150% of the yield, whereas think of it like an LP puts in $100 and then you put $100. The LP earns 150% of that, like $150 worth of the yield. And then you are earning the other $50 of yield, like of the yield that generates, that $200 generates. You're getting $50. The LPs are getting $150. That might be another incentive pendulum we've talked about, the idea of that being a separate pendulum where the amount of, you know, Bitcoin that's in the pool that is just Bitcoin, and then one Bitcoin in the pool that is like double-sided LP, blah, 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 whatever, kind of help dictate the kind of that incentive pendulum. But basically, you're putting a BDC. The network just adds more BDC to that vault in one form or another. And then when you want to, you know, you're owning part of that vault and any, you know, yield that thing makes. It's almost like if you're familiar with like ERC, what is it called? 4626 or 2646 or something like this. I have like a vault thing, which is very similar to the VThor. Like you're locking up Thor, you're acquiring VThor, and then the value of that VThor increases because more Thor tokens are kind of sent into that vault. It's conceptually structured somewhat similar to that. Does that make sense?
Okay, so it will get swapped into a synthetic Bitcoin, but then a synthetic, if I understood that correctly, has half price exposure to Rune, or no?
No. So a synthetic Bitcoin is collateralized by the pool itself, which is half Bitcoin and half Rune. But the value of that synthetic Bitcoin is always equal to one Bitcoin, right? So like if the price of Rune goes down relative to asset, right, you basically, the network will dynamically take value from the LPs to ensure that synthetic always maintains its one-to-one ratio with, in terms of value with a layer one BDC. And so if Rune outperforms asset, you know, then basically you're losing some of your kind of, the LPs are taking some value from the synthetic holders and they're kind of gaining some value in that sense. That's why, like, when we talk about synthetic utilization in the network, that the more synthetic utilization there is, like relative to the pool depth, is the more of a leveraged position the rune holders or the LPs are taking on the rune asset, right? So if rune performs well, they make more money. If rune underperforms the asset, they make less money. And that's so, the same is being applied here. But you as a synthetic holder, even though it's collateralized by the pool, which is half rune and half Bitcoin, one synthetic Bitcoin is always maintains the value of one real Bitcoin.
Yeah, thank you. That makes sense. Yeah, that was actually my question. If the rune price tanks, then who is paying the bill? And you answered my question. Essentially, the LPs will pay the bill. And other right. The other way around, if the rune price rises, then LPs will benefit from it. Okay. Right. Yeah, thank you. And another question. Let's say, because last week or the week before that, we talked about the impermanent loss protection and how, like, so many rune are in the reserve right now, which are not used right now for the impermanent loss protection because it's so little. Have you done like calculations or anything? Because I think the impermanent loss protection is actually most important when the rune price will rise. Let's say the rune price will 20x against Bitcoin, then probably some LPs want to get out and take profits, and then the impermanent loss protection will get like very, very important. Have you done like any calculations on that, or have you thought about that scenario in any way?
Yeah, so in that scenario, because the rune price is so high, the number of rune that is, you know, that is you know, liable and in permanent loss protection is actually very, very small, right? It's the reverse when the rune price goes 20x down versus 20x up, where the number of rune that is liable, like right now, I think it's there's actually a domain website with a live dashboard. You can actually look it up anytime, and you can see within each individual pool like how much rune liability there is. And so right now it's like 3.7 million rune in total out of a reserve that has 170 million. So it's still like, you know, like 1% or 2%. So it's relatively small, even in this kind of bear scenario that we're in today. If you're in the situation you're talking about where it's like 20x up, like rune's, you know, mooning like crazy, blah blah blah, whatever, then the number of rune that we're talking about would be like, you know, would be hypothetically speaking, I was throwing out a random number, but like it'd be probably like 20,000 or 30,000 rune or something like this, because the price is so high, the number of rune that you need to acquire to kind of counter the IL is relatively very small amount.
Cool. Okay. Another question to the reserve. Is there any mechanism where the reserve is actually acquiring more rune? Or how does that work?
Yes. So there's two primary ways right now. One is every time there's a swap in the network, there's a small outbound transaction fee that the reserve takes, which I think is like 0.02 rune, I think, or maybe it's one rune. I can't really actually remember what the numbers off the top of my head. But every swap actually just generates a little bit of rune to the pool, to the reserve, excuse me. The other thing is that Thor names just went live. And so anytime you're buying a Thor name or you're registering a Thor name or you're extending your expiration on the Thor name, all that gets sent into the reserve. And then the third thing, which hasn't happened yet, but that's part of the single-sided yield, single-sided feature, is that the network itself, the reserve itself, is now going to become an LP. And so it's now generating a yield, right? So it's going to be dumping rune into one of these pools or many of these pools. And then it's going to be earning swap fees, blah, 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 blah. And then earning a yield from that. So it's going to be eventually, I would think that the reserve itself is going to be one of the biggest LPs, if not the biggest LP, if not the sole LP in the network, and start earning all that yield goes to the reserve. And so it's constantly going to be kind of topped up to some degree. But like you'll still see that the reserve is like being, if you look at the graph of like how much room's in the reserve, it's like a continuous downward angle, right, on purpose. Like it's supposed to kind of emulate, at least the original math was supposed to emulate the emission curve of Bitcoin in terms of how it works. Like Bitcoin does like a halving every 4 years. And so we're basically doing a halving every 4 years, but just doing it in a continuous way rather than have like a staircase. If you think about like a staircase graph, it's more of like a continuous line at a downward angle. And so eventually what's going to happen is the the income that the reserve makes from Thor names, from swaps, from, you know, swap fees, from becoming an LP, blah, 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 that like the income becomes greater than the block reward is on the block, right? And so then you're going to eventually hit this kind of like synergistic equilibrium between the two. So even though Rune is like a static asset in terms of the static of the supply, 500 million, the reserve effectively has an infinite supply of Rune because it's constantly getting inbound something and it's constantly spending something, and the amount that it's spending, it kind of asymptotes to zero over a long period of time.
Cool. That sounds really great. Thanks for elaborating on that. How do you make sure that the earned Rune by the reserve are equal to the amount of Rune spent by block rewards?
Yeah. So if every block, say the block reward right now is 5 Rune, let's imagine that's true for a second, and the next block is going to be, you know, 4.99, and the next block is going to be 4.98, and so like every block it's going to get lower. And so, but there is some sort of amount that's being made, you know, an income. Say the income every block is like 3 Rune and swaps and Thor names and whatever. It's not so much a static thing. It fluctuates from block to block or day to day, but just the simplicity of discussion, we'll just imagine that the income is 3 Rune if you kind of like level it out. And so then effectively like the block rewards will kind of diminish until it gets to the basically 3 Rune. And so then it's spending 3 Rune and it's putting 3 Rune in, which means that the block reward becomes unchanged because the depth of the pool, the depth of the reserve becomes unchanged. And so it just starts emitting 3 Rune and then taking in 3 Rune and then emitting 3 Rune and taking in 3 Rune. Like it just basically kind of hits that equilibrium. Now, of course, in reality, you know, you could have days that have less income for the reserve and days you have more income for the reserve. So imagine a scenario where the, you know, the reserve goes down to like 2 Rune, right? Now it's like 2 Rune per block. Now we're going to start moving from that 3 emission curve every block to, you know, it's going to inch its way down to 2, it hits that equilibrium. And then conversely, let's just say that the income goes higher because there's more trades or something happens, blah, 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 whatever. And now we're at 5. So now we're adding 5, but we're taking out 2 of the reserve. So now we're emitting 2, and now we're going to emit 2.01 and then 2.02. And then eventually you kind of get up to that 5 number that we're at. So the network, the reserve is kind of emits, it kind of follows or heads towards the income of the reserve. Like it's emitting the amount that needs to get emit to head towards whatever the income amount is. And right now the income amount is far less than what it's emitting today, which is by design. We need to kind of start with a lot of room in the beginning just to kind of like juice the yield, just to kind of kickstart this whole thing. Otherwise, this thing would never even launch to begin with. So like it's kind of heading towards whatever the income amount is. And for right now, the income amount is relative to the swaps and Thor names and eventually the yield from becoming an LP.
Okay, so the emission at some point has to be adjusted in the future.
The emission itself does not. Like, so when you say emission, I'm thinking the term emission curve. And the emission curve is just dictating how fast that kind of line is that we're heading downward. So, you know, if you want to kind of do a lot of room right now and then just and depletes it quickly, or just a little bit and it just lasts longer. And so that's the emission curve, which I think initially was a number of 6, and today is like, I think it's 7 or 8 or something. I can't remember what it is. But the emission will always be less than the previous block until we kind of like have an equilibrium with the income of the reserve. And then it'll be like, basically static or the same every block.
Now I got it. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Last question. Sorry, taking up so much time. Now that Thor Names has launched, can you give us an update maybe on how far are we on the Monero side?
Yeah. So Monero is something that we're still pushing for and looking to see happen. I'm looking to see making sure it happens. Right now, we're still waiting on the Haven team to finish the Haven implementation. Haven is a fork of Monero. They're both crypto note based chains. And so once they finish the Haven implementation, then just copying and pasting in a literal sense to Monero is rather simple and rather easy. And so thankfully, the Haven team understands the intricacies and complexities around the, you know, ring signatures and crypto note kind of chain stuff, which is, thankfully, they have that because I'm not an expert on ring signatures personally. And so they're doing all the hard work and heavy lifting, which is great. I can focus on building other things. And once they complete with theirs, which hopefully is Hopefully soon. Last time I saw, they had all their like smoke tests passing and stuff. So everything's actually functional and working on the Haven side. Last time I saw, at least. I think they're now working on the Exchange AS stuff and that kind of stuff. But like once that's done and that implementation is done, then adding Monero should be literal copy and paste.
Yeah, cool. Just to elaborate on that real quick, why I think that's really important, because might not seem like a big deal right now, but I listened yesterday to a podcast with Peter McCormack. He's like a kind of a Bitcoin maxi, but he had a Monero guy on, and he asked him the question, like, what if every centralized exchange would delist Monero? Then essentially, because Monero earlier last year, I think, implemented a function which enables atomic swaps for Bitcoin. But if every SEC would delist Monero, then Monero wouldn't have a market price anymore, and then atomic swaps wouldn't be possible. But if it was listed on Thorchain and no one could stop that, that would be Thorchain would be the place to give Monero a market value. And I think that's really, really big, at least for all the privacy, like you mentioned before, like how many people are into Bitcoin. Yeah, but so many people also are into privacy, and then they're using probably Thorchain as the decentralized exchange to get in and out of Monero. And I think that's really, really big.
Yeah, in that hypothetical scenario where like Thorchain is the only place where you can buy and sell Monero, which is crazy to think, but like it could, I guess it's certainly possible, then you wouldn't have arbitrage anymore, because there's no way to arbitrage it. There's no other markets to kind of crack the pool price. And therefore, whatever price Monero is being, you know, bought or sold on Thorchain is actually the literal price of Monero. And if you want to buy, you buy it, and it causes the price to go up. And if you want to sell it, you sell it, and the price goes slightly down. It would be like just like that, which is kind of fascinating to think, but be incredible.
Yeah, you're totally right, Secret. And like as far as I know, Thorchain is the only cross-chain AMM that even has the capability of doing something like Monero, you know, never mind all the other things that it already supports, like Bitcoin, which no one else supports. Monero integration is going to be absolutely huge. I really hope we get to see that before the end of this year. Hopefully the Haven team can get that locked down. I know that like they're probably working on a bunch of other things like besides the integration. I know they're doing like a tokenomics update for their whole system. Like they're running into, you know, a lot of issues there, especially after the Terra crash. But I hopefully we can see Monero this year, because you're right, it will be a game changer and something that no one else can offer, and it just adds to the value proposition of this entire network, which is already so strong.
Yeah, there's no other project in the space that's even in development that's not a fork of Thorchain that can actually support Monero. Like even something like Chainflip is probably the closest non-fork competitor to Thorchain, and for that one they require Snort signatures to be able to interact with a particular chain, which is I'm pretty sure Monero does not support that, and so. And same thing with Osmosis, they can't support Monero because it doesn't have IBC or any reasonable way to create IBC. So like it's really the only ones in the space that are even positioned to support Monero. And Monero is like, make a mistake, Monero is a very important asset. I know it's not, market cap isn't like as big as something like Bitcoin, but it is critical to the greater sphere that we maintain an ability to have privacy if we choose to have it. It should always be an option to have that choice. And there should be no person or entity on the planet that can take away that the ability to choose to have privacy if that's what you want to have for yourself.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Yeah, I'm from Europe, and you guys have seen what they implemented right now in the European Union with the wallet doxing and everything like that. So I think in the future, it's definitely going to be more and more important, in my opinion. Thank you guys for answering my question.
Sweet. Does anyone else want to come up and ask any questions? We have just a minute or two left here, so we can let one person up to ask something.
In the meantime, wallet doxing is like a crazy thing to me. Like it's seeming more and more that toward the direction that the community is like, not the community, but the regulators are heading towards, which is terrifying in some cases.
That's the direction it's going. I mean, it really does seem like, you know, people don't want us to have privacy, but having an unstoppable force like Thorchain out here that protecting the right to privacy to individuals is super important. I brought up Thormaxian. What's up, man?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify on the way the single-sided staking is working. So the room reserve becomes an LPR to match, say, the Bitcoin single-side depositors. And thus the reserve earns its fair share of LP rewards. And when you're saying that that, like, basically juices the emissions, does that mean that that as that money comes in, it then gets distributed to LPers and node operators as like a boost to the block rewards?
No, not so much like that. It's more of like as more synthetic BDC exists in the network relative to the depth of the pool, the more risk the LPs take on. Like we were saying before, how like if the room price goes up relative to BDC, then they make more money, and if it goes down, well, obviously they lose money. And so if there's like 50% of the pool is like, say there's like 1,000 Bitcoin in the pool, and there's 500 synthetic Bitcoin, that's a very highly leveraged position to take. Like you have very large volatility fluctuations, and you're not going to be very happy in a bear market, but you'll be very happy in a bull market. And so it's not so much that the reserve is like giving room to other LPs or whatever. It's more of like by the reserve jumping into the pool as well and providing capital, the utilization goes from like 50%, and my hypothetical situation starts dumping a bunch of room in there, and the utilization goes from 50% down to 30% or 20% or 10% or 5%, even close to 1% or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it just becomes like it's sharing the load. Right, the reserve itself is like taking on the some of the force or the risk of the LPers and just kind of sharing that kind of that load in a sense, right? Mm.
Like say Rune goes down, the LPs are on the hook for all that, and they'll experience a lot of losses if there's a lot of like synth BTC that's minted, for example. Because if Rune goes down and half of the synths are half backed by Rune, then that's twice as much price risk for an NLP. So by the reserve adding, the reserve takes on a lot of that risk. And obviously we know that the reserve has diamond hands and a lot of room to put into those pools.
So if the reserve is now making income because it's an LPer, like where do those profits go? Who ends up with those profits? Does the reserve just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger infinitely? Or
yes, the reserve effectively is earning more and more value. So like when the reserve enters one of these pools, it's not doing single-sided rune. It's actually doing both, right? It's providing rune, but it's doing like an asim ad in a sense. So it's actually owning rune and Bitcoin, a rune and Ethereum, a rune and whatever pools we're talking about here. And so you're right. It's just earning more and more yield. And it never really withdraws to sell its position, because it's the reserve, it never sells, right? It's only going to hodl, right? It's just increasing its bags, and it has no interest to sell in a traditional sense of it, right? And so it's constantly just going to be earning more and more and more, and the reserve is just going to either grow or shrink depending upon the movement of the rune asset relative to the other assets, right? So if you take like reserve is 170 million, and I'll just say that it deploys 20 million rune into the various pools, and let's just say that rune underperforms BDC or whatever. That means that it's like its net value in terms of like dollars and cents is probably decreased. But if rune outperforms BDC and ETH and like these other things, then its net value has increased in terms of dollars and cents. And so it is constantly trying to like to use its weight to support the LPs, but also taking its fair share of the yield that's generated from all those trades and swaps that are happening.
And so what's the overall effect of the, it just seems like if it's making profits, are those profits is just being thrown into a vault that no one will ever see the light of, that'll never see the light of day? Does it ultimately drive the rune price higher because of that? Or?
Yeah, effectively, let's imagine a scenario where everything's performing well, right? And so the reserve is just kind of growing larger and larger in terms of, because it's earning more and more yield, everything's going great, right? And so the amount of rune in the reserve, in a sense, is higher, right? Mm-hmm. It's increasing, 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 increasing. And therefore, the amount of circulating supply of rune in the community is decreasing, 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 decreasing.
Gotcha.
Right? And so like you can almost think of it like that's rune that's in the reserve is Rune, but it's not circulating. And so like, you think about the circulating supply of Rune right now is like, I think it's like 330 million or whatever the hell the number is. Mm-hmm. And the max supply is 500 million, which that additional 170 million that we're talking about is in the reserve. So like the price of Rune is priced not on the total Rune in existence, which is that 500 million. The price of Rune is on the circulating supply, which is 330 million right mm-hmm. now. And so if the reserve is like making money off of this thing and it's kind of like, you know, it's just kind of adding to its bags in a sense, then the amount of actual Rune in circulation effectively, theoretically, draws down.
Sure. So this isn't newly minted Rune. It's just, yeah, there's just fewer and fewer Rune in each pool that's worth more and more and more.
Yes. If it's like, it all depends upon like the synth utilization, and the network will dynamically like add its position. The reserve will add Rune to the pool or remove Rune from a pool depending upon the synth utilization of that pool. So like, say the synth cap is at 15%, which is what it is now. And we tell the reserve like, hey, your number is 10%, right? And so if the synth utilization goes above 10% or maybe at 10%, whatever, it starts to dump Rune into the pool. It starts bleeding Rune into the pool slowly over a period of time, causing the synth utilization to go below 10% back down to 9%. Right. Mm-hmm. And if it's at 9% and it has a Rune position in the pool, it starts to kind of withdraw Rune from the pool, and then it pushes the synth utilization back up to 10% again. And so it's just trying to like push in either direction towards that number, whatever that number is. I'll just call it 10%, for example. And like, so the synth utilization for like these pools will be, you know, pushed towards 10% unless two scenarios. Unless there's no more Rune in the reserve, has no more Rune in the pool, so it can go to 9% or 8% or 7% because it has nothing to take out. So it can just go ahead and keep on declining. Or conversely, the pools are just like 100% stock full, and the reserve can no longer deploy more Rune into the pool because it has no space for it anymore. In which case, the synthesization might climb above 10% to hit that 15% or potentially even more, depending upon price movements.
Gotcha. So it's almost like an expansion tank in a plumbing system or something. It absorbs pressure shocks in one way or the other.
Yeah, it goes in one direction or the other, depending upon what the LPs need. If the LPs need more support, the reserve supports them. If the LPs need less support, the reserve kind of pulls back. And in doing so, it's like, you know, hopefully it's like taking more, it's adding more Rune to the reserve and therefore driving down the circulating supply of Rune, and just, you know, causing the Rune price to go higher, which is obviously something we all want, including the reserve for that matter.
Sure. So is there ever a scenario where let's say it's, you know, just this crazy flywheel of success and the reserve grows huge and the supply of Rune is drying up? Is that ever a problem, or is it just like Bitcoin where it's just infinitely divisible and no big deal?
Well, neither Rune or Bitcoin is infinitely divisible. They both subscribe to a 1E8 notation. Mm-hmm. So there are limits to how much it can be divisible. But in a hypothetical scenario where like we'll just go ape shit crazy and unrealistic and just say that the reserve has, you know, 499 million Rune in the reserve, and there's only 1 million Rune in actual circulation, and like, you know, the market cap of Rune, let's just say the market cap of Rune is like, you know, $5 billion. That means that each Rune is worth, you know, a fucking ton of money. Right. So it becomes it's a pretty crazy notion, but like the idea that Rune's price becomes so gargantuanly high because the supply is so low is, that's possible, I suppose, but I would see that to be unlikely.
Yeah, just the extreme edge cases sort of help me understand how the mechanism really works.
Yeah, right.
It's not like the reserve is stealing profits from the community, so to speak, and just locking them away where no one can get to them.
No, it's not stealing. It's
sorry,
taking...
the other...
Go ahead.
Sorry, Chad, you go.
I was going to say that it's not taking profits from other people. It's just like, well, if the reserve is providing liquidity into the pool, then it should get paid. But it's deserved, like, equal
share.
It's like equal share rather than, like, you know, being a twiddling its kind of mustache and say, I'm taking from like Thor Maxey or whatever. Like, yeah, it's taking its fair share in a sense.
Right.
So Thermax, you know, the other part of this, which we kind of glossed over a little bit, but I think it's one of the really important parts of this, is that you know, this is the design that lends itself to single-sided yield for Bitcoin. So that lets people deposit in, you know, Bitcoin, and some of that price risk of Rune is, you know, taken up by the reserve. And by doing that, that allows really, really big Bitcoin holders and ETH holders to deposit huge amounts into these pools. And that really, that drives us a lot closer to this, you know, 3x TVL dumping of native assets in these pools and getting the pools really, really deep and driving up the deterministic value, like, the, you know, the baseline value of Rune itself. So that brings us a lot closer to that, you know, real value accrual of the asset.
Yeah, I was just asking because I've seen a few Twitter discussions on this now, and it seems like a lot of the community is like, well, wait, the reserve's going to single side? We want a single side so that we earn the money. Now the reserve's going to earn the money instead. It's like, well the reserve, explain how everyone's still single side.
The reserve is just being a regular LP. It's just providing just Rune, but it's taking the price exposure of both assets and all the good and bad things that come with that.
Yeah.
Some of the mentality is that the reserve will only be involved with like layer one assets. So it wouldn't do like ERC-20s or, you know, ICS-20s or like anything else that matter, like just, mm-hmm. just the main asset per chain, which is obviously less risk in doing so.
Yep.
But yeah, like I think it's net positive because by doing this, providing this for, you know, the Bitcoin maxi who wants to earn BTC on the BTC, they're going to be adding, you know, value into the pools, making the pools deeper. By making the pools deeper, the price comes down in terms of like swap fees. You make the swap fees cheaper, more people are going to trade. You have more people to trade, like, you know, creates more yield, blah, blah, blah. Like it becomes somewhat of a flywheel in a sense.
Yeah. And so
like,
it's the black hole.
That's the black hole and stuff. Like that's what we all been trying to do to some regard. It's like we want to drive TVL as much as possible. We want this to be like the number one settlement layer for like crypto in general that is used, you know, ubiquitously across every ecosystem and every, you know, not even just like other DEXs, but other sexes as well, right? You know, other institutions can utilize this as a mechanism to move around as they see fit. So, it, you know, getting those pools to be as deep as possible is part of that kind of drive.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Thanks for clarifying.
Yep.
Sweet. Chad, do you have time for one more person?
Yeah, sure.
Come up. Yep. We got Poker Crypto.
Hey, Poker. All right.
I'm just going to bring a prime directive then. We'll leave it there.
Hey, guys. It's not really a question. It's more of a comment. I just want to thank you all. You know who you are. Thank you for constantly moving this forward. And please don't stop doing this with the weekly updates. It's just such a great recharge. Every single week I get excited over and over again. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, bud.
Yeah, we'll try it. We'll, like, you know, we can't promise to do it every single week, obviously, because, like, you know, there's always stuff going on. But we really do try to do these every week because we know that this is a really positive thing for the community and a great way for people to ask questions and really learn just about the project in general. So thanks for coming, everybody.
Yeah. Never, you know, doesn't have to be every week. It's just great to know that I can keep checking in real time. Thank you.
Yep. We're here. We're building. We're not going anywhere. Hi, Chad.
Absolutely. Keep shipping. Even like that's the reason why I love bear markets in some regard is like bear markets is a great time to ship, right? You can get focused, you can get just write code, ship it, innovate. I love that kind of stuff. It gets me excited in the morning for sure.
Agreed, yeah. And like even from the community perspective, like hearing from you, Chad, hearing from Nine Realms, like hearing from all these teams in the Thorchain space, it's definitely inspiring, like in these times, just because so much of crypto feels a bit like on hold. And then in our corner of crypto, like everything is just still happening at least the speed it already was, which is, I agree with Prime Directive. It's like when just speaking for myself, like when I hear this stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, like we're going, like everything is happening. So it's always fun to do these spaces and connect with the community and see that everything's moving forward, regardless of any price up or down situations.
I think especially after this like big blow up of these CFI, DeFi, like hybrids, you know, BlockFi and Celsius, that just motivates the team even harder to push forward to this, you know, decentralized vision of cross-chain and single-sided yields, because that's the holy grail of all products. And we've seen what happens when it's done in a non-transparent way. So this team's never going to stop building towards a, you know, decentralized version that, you know, really gives the opportunity to everybody there.
Yeah, I mean, I have a tendency just to like ignore all the crap happening in the news about this chain to this or that, some CFI thing happened to that. Like, I don't, to some extent, I don't care because I just like have this idea and this vision, like, and we all do within the project itself and the community itself of like being able to innovate and push forward and like forget about what other people are doing because whatever they're doing, solving the right problem oftentimes. And for us, I'm just like, how do we do single-sided? How do we do like order books? How do we do scale the bond? Like these things are like really big movements, massive movements, I would even say, that just like are offering a vastly improved mechanism of how we operate and function within the entire space of the cryptocurrency industry. And so like we're constantly thinking about like, how do we do like lending, for example, in a way that is completely restructured and, you know, is far better than everything else we've seen in the entire space, right? Like that's what gets me excited enough in the morning to like to build and innovate. And so like, even though the market's down, the room price is down, like who cares? Like,
single sided yield's coming. There's nothing they can do to stop it.
Yeah. And a lot of that centralized competition seems like they won't be around to compete. So,
I mean, I wish them all the best. You know, I hope they kind of survive their struggles in any project or company that struggles. That's just part of the process. But like, if they don't last, that's just Darwinism happening, right? That's just survival of the fittest, right? The ones that have a good designs that are resilient and you know resistant to like failure scenarios will stick around for long periods of time, and the ones that don't, you know, won't. Right.
Sweet. All right. Let's wrap it up. Thanks everyone for coming out. See you next Friday.
See you, everybody.